So far.
That's your best bet?
Power stops.
No pictures, take the paparazzi away. Brought to you by the power of Notepad, here is today's agenda for the EIX Working Group at Right 52. Good morning everybody, my name is Mike Hughes, I'm the chair today. So first of all, a business trivia, hello, yes, that's me. Second one is, if you are speaking today, please upload your presentation. So go to rosie.wright.net, I'll show you where, here we go. Go to rosie.wright.net and click on this link here, upload presentation. This thing runs rsync or something, or wget, and gets all the presentations every so often, so you get a full set on the laptop, and we don't have to change laptops. We've got a really full agenda today, and I need to go at 12:30 because we have the working group chairs lunch, so I need to go, so we need to finish on time. So without further ado, let's sort out a scribe. Do we have a scribe? Thank you, cheers. And obviously attendee sheets as well. So attendee sheets, please sign up and tell us that you're here.
I need to keep talking, hang on, turn my microphone on. Open or shut, there we go, that's on, okay. And so the first person up is going to be Serge. I mean, otherwise, if everybody's happy with the agenda, everybody's happy with the agenda as it stands? Any comments about the minutes from the last meeting? No, so the minutes from the last meeting I'll take as being approved, and we're happy with the agenda as it stands, so we're going to go with that as it stands. So the first person up is Serge, yeah, if I can remember his name.
Radovich.
Okay, thanks. So the only other thing I'd like to say is, once we get into the IXP updates, when somebody's taking questions, can the next person get ready? And I'll prompt the next person to get ready. Okay.
Thanks, Mike. My name is Serge Radovic from URIX. I visited the karaoke bar last night, so you can hear me okay. URIX is European Internet Exchange Association. However, since January 2005, we've expanded the association to include associate members outside of Europe. So as of today, we have 38 affiliated IXPs, 32 are from Europe, 3 from Asia, and 3 from the US. Since the last update at Right 51, new members to join is Tix Tuscany from Florence, Italy, and associate members JPix, Nixie India, and Switchin Beta is the latest associate member to join. Stats, I take a calculation of all the publicly available IXP peak traffic stats, of member traffic stats in Europe. In the last 6 months, we've seen an increase of about 32%, 126 gig. It's currently just under 520 gig. So it's about a 240 gig or 85% increase in the last 12 months. URIX forums, we have 2 forums a year. Last one we had in Prague was in September last year. We had 27 IXPs attend from 20 different countries. The next one is coming up in about 10 days' time in Dublin. INEX in Dublin, Ireland, is the host, and Foundry will be sponsoring us. And we've already got 32 IXPs on the registration list. So it's looking to be a pretty well-attended forum. Other news, since October last year, we've employed a part-time web developer, Peter Bannick, and he's just helped us get the new website online. And we'll also be doing a little bit more work on some of the tools that we have. And the IXP Benchmarking Club, of course. We completed a second round of the Benchmarking Club between our member IXPs. We had 29 participants, so it was nearly 100% participation rate as far as the members are concerned. And of course, the results are just for member IXP. And that's about it for me joining. If you'd like to join, please have a look at our website or come and talk to me. And that's about it. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Oh, yeah, well, I know there isn't a a Turkish IXP or one in Istanbul. And I believe there's been a couple of attempts, but does anyone know of any plans that are currently on the way to set up an IXP here in Istanbul? Yeah. Okay. No, I don't think so. No, it wasn't me. Okay. Any other questions? No. Okay. Thanks, Mike. You don't want questions?
Hello. Okay. Right. I'm trying to work out because I think this guy's moving the mute button as well. So yeah, next person up. First of all, we'll go with Josef from NICCZ is going to present first, followed by whoever's presenting from AMZIX doing their general update, followed by Telehouse. So, Josef.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. My name is Josef Homel from NICCZ in Prague. Only a few information. We have currently 59 networks connected. We have three members using 10 gigabit ports currently, and 12 members are doing IPv6 peering. NICCZ is already 10 years old. We reached the traffic of 10 gig in the beginning of this year. Currently, we are around 13 gigabit totally. The latest news from last week is that the DNS server of EU and B was installed in NICCZ. And currently, what we are doing, we are working on more stability. We installed secondary supervisors at three ports, and we are planning more about fiber redundancy and power supplies and checking the access to the devices and so on, because we think that the value of the exchange point is the stability and reliability for the business of the members. this is current statistic. One more information. We had a general meeting 3 weeks ago, and we invited Job Wittemann from AMZIX, and I like to thank him that he gave a presentation to our member and explaining what is the development of AMZIX, what are similar things as between AMZIX and NICCZ, what are the differences, and I think it opened eyes of our members that we should think and cooperate internationally, that we are not living alone in Prague, but we have to adapt the information from other exchange points, and that the membership in EuroIX Association, that we are profiting from this fact. And I think it proved and helped our members to understand this better. So that's from my side. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Carol Massini of AMZIX, and I'll do a quick update there. Last time we showed the board member statistics was September 2005, and we've grown with about 13 members and 24 ports. As you can see, the largest growth has been in the 10 gig area, which is very exciting, but also very challenging for us, and Henk is going to talk a little bit about that later. What you do see is that due to the growth in 10 gig, the gig growth has, well, there is no growth anymore. They have actually diminished, which is due to the fact that a lot of parties that had aggregated gig links actually moved to 10 gig. So when they moved to 1 10 gig, they cancelled 2, 3, 4 gigs. So that's why they diminished. What you can see is that the FE and Ethernet ports are still growing a little bit, which is basically due to the fact that we operate the GRX, the GPRS roaming exchange, because many of the mobile parties don't need that high bandwidth. Traffic and volume statistics. The public peering traffic at the moment is at 144 gigabits per second. Nightly traffic or night traffic hasn't grown that much. In fact, we had seen a tripling of the night traffic the last 2 years, but the previous 2 years, but this year it's only doubled. It has doubled. So that there's a difference there. Volume is at the moment just over a petabyte a day, averagely. The current topology, as Hank will tell you a lot more about how we got from the previous topology to this topology and where we are going, I won't go into much detail, but as you can see, we now have two core switches, RX16s in those are the big ones, and we moved the MGH, which were the previous core switches, those 2x2s, being stub switches basically, but he'll go into that in a lot more detail. Developments. As you could see in the previous slide, we don't have 10 gig E available at global switch up to now, but we will implement a photonic switch there and be able to offer 10 gig E ER interfaces at global switch as well in May. Apart from that, there is some developments on VoIP, Enum, and SIP that we are working on. The official delegate Enum tree, and a couple of providers have started SIP IX developments, and groups of members have started to look into that. Also, there is some national developments on streaming media and a role that we could play in there. We're looking into that, and we're having some meetings outside of our general meeting to discuss what we should do with that and how we should go along. Oh, and I included some slides on the member survey we did because, well, a lot of the members are here and they might be interested in seeing. Basically, the member survey was, we showed a very good results, especially for the NOC team. The performance that was rated was very high, and we were very glad with that because they've been working hard, and it seems that it didn't affect the satisfaction that was shown in 2004. It was even better in 2005, so that's great. The platform parameters were good, and the only thing that came out of the survey was that we could work on reporting, which is part of why we started with a trainee to look into an S-Flow project. It's interesting to see that an M6, or at least at the response of the member survey, about 87%, which is quite high, has an open or semi-open peering policy. And 64% peers with more than 100 other networks. And what you could see was that the networks that are in M6 are basically at several exchanges, most of them. The average is 4+ if you exclude the parties that are at more than 10 exchanges. Okay, that was it. Any questions?
Are there any questions for Kara?
Yes, hi.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Dave Meyer. You mentioned that you're getting more SIP or Enum or VoIP peering going on. Is it peering or is it co-location of SIP proxies or the reason I'm kind of asking is because we started up this thing called Spearmint for various reasons in the IETF, and this thing's about VoIP peering right now, or actually more generally about real-time session peering or something like that. And there's been a lot of confusion about really what that is, and I was just curious as to whether or not you could speak a little bit about what people are actually doing and there with that.
Okay. Well, obviously there's been a lot of VoIP peering before it was actually in like a hype. And a lot of traffic is actually flowing over the exchange. But what I meant was that there are several trials and trials going on with providers that have value-added services, like Bluestar or Xconnect, those type of people, that several members are connecting to over the exchange and to provide services and to exchange traffic. That's basically what it is. Other questions? Does it answer your question, Dave?
Yeah.
Okay.
So after that's not your slides, is it? No. After Telehouse, DKIC, so Bernard, Danielle from Namex, are you here? Yes, you are. Okay, right. And then me, and then thanks. So if Bernard can be ready to go, and then Danielle. It's a really bad sign, low battery, isn't it? We don't want that. Hang on. Ah, yes, lack of power. That's a really big problem. We're going to come unstuck really quickly if we don't have any power. Okay, well, we'll try and find your presentation while we fight with low battery. It should have your name on it.
Okay.
Yay, and low battery sorted as well. Right, thanks.
Okay, sorry for the confusion. My name is Akio Sugiyama from Telehouse. This is, I'd like to give you an update of the New York and Los Angeles. NYX, the traffic still continue to grow. It's like almost double every year. The peak is 14 gig, average 11 gigabit. Number of participants currently 89 members, and we have added about 35 members last year. And we start receiving a lot of the port speed upgrades. Most customers, the max out the DV port. So we are getting second gig or a trunking or 10G. But we started having to receive the many 10G port upgrades since January 2006. That's a big difference between last year and this year. Last year we have no kind of, orders of the 10G, but we do have a lot of the 10G orders. Update for new activities for 2006 is the we're trying to replace the two nodes, one node at the 24 baud rate and one node at the 60 Hz. This is for the switch capacity, better QoS handling, so that kind of thing. And we're trying to upgrade both nodes in summer 2006. Los Angeles, the still continue to grow. The peak is about 2 gig. Average is a little bit shy to the 2 gig. Number of members is 31 members. And we actually upgraded switching fabric to accommodate more DV port. Los Angeles, we have a kind of interconnecting to another exchange point called the CIX, actually formerly called LAIP, but they changed the name to CIX. And the you can join the Los Angeles exchange point from the One Wilshire building like this. New development for this year is the VIP peering. Just as I mentioned, we are providing a six-site service. And the new tariff is providing the ELAM service of upper layer, and we provide the lower layer service. And we provide, we can partner in New York and Los Angeles. Actually, NewStar have installed ENAM server at 25 Broadway, so we are ready to go. So if you are a current customer at Telehouse, you can start trial. If you're not the customer, but if you are interested in trial, this is trial, you can free, so you can, you know, you're welcome to join. That's it. Thank you very much.
Okay, hello, my name is Bernard Kröner. I'm representing the V6 together with my colleagues Frank and Wolfgang. Some updates, recent developments, new people, as you may notice. We have a new office, we have a new slogan and some new statistics. We had a fourth technical meeting on the 5th of April. A lot of people attended, about 60 members were there. We hired two new people for customer relations, which is Wolfgang Tremmel, and also Frank Orlowski, who's doing business development or marketing. Then we opened a new office and offering some services with our own infrastructure. We had an opening party, so about 400 people came. This is the new office. We have something to offer if you have some spare time in Frankfurt, just pop in and have a chat with us. You can have your conferences there, so if you're a member of the D6 or you just want to visit us to have some meetings there, we can offer you some space. We have our own lab, some hardware, you can try out some vendors you may not have in your network, tried some interoperability things, and also can do some tests and maybe some lessons there. We have a small conference room, up to 60 people can join there for meetings and conferences. What we found out in the past is that a lot of new members come from the so-called emerging markets and from Asia, because a lot of new lines come into Germany from Russia and also from Pacific. So new lines built via Singapore, announcements that a lot of lines now from India, for example, they connect to European mainland, but are extended to the central area of Europe. So obviously they all meet up in Frankfurt. And we have a lot of requests from these markets, so a lot of East European ISPs are close to connecting to the V6. We also have plans for opening a new site by the end of the year. It's an area in Frankfurt surrounded by the streets of Kleierstraße and Lebstöckerstraße. There are a lot of small colo providers there. It's the kind of historic first area where there were colo providers in Frankfurt. So what we try to do is connect all these six with the central switch there and talk to all of them, so that at least we have all significant colo sites in Frankfurt connected to the D6. So every colo in Frankfurt will be easily kind of D6 enabled. A lot of voice and DSL providers connect there, so we also have some voice projects and ELAM projects in the pipeline. We may talk the next time about this. Usual statistics, we now have 174 members, 271 ports connected, which makes a total bandwidth of over 300 gigabits. We have a growth of about 20% of members per year. Traffic also growth of about 100% every 10 months. A lot of members now start to upgrade to 10 gig ports, as we have a very cheap way of combining gigabit links, because the second port for us will be offered to the members for a very cheap price. A lot of people stay with ether channeling instead of upgrading to 10 gig, which bears us some 10 gig ports, which is okay. But now a lot of members thinking about upgrading and still are in the process of upgrading. Yeah, the next event, we will have a joint conference with ECO, the German ISPA. In June, we will host the next, the meeting after the Dublin meeting of your rights. We will have some anniversary celebration. We don't know if the 10th or 11th or 12th, so we're talking about 1 year of a big party, so hopefully this will happen in October, finally. We have a next technical meeting in autumn, and together with the AMZIX and LINX, we will have the first European Peering Forum in Frankfurt, and after that it will be London and Amsterdam, so just a new way of doing a little bit peering things in Europe. Yeah, and the usual craft at the end, and asking for questions. Nothing? Okay, then.
One comment, your lab looks really nice. Your lab looks really nice.
Yeah.
I'm really, really, go back it, I'm absolutely envious. What sort of test equipment have you got in the lab at the moment?
We have some switches and routers from Huawei, mm-hmm. from Hewlett Packard, from Foundry, Fosten, Cisco.
These are just coming on loan or eval, basically, and they come on loan and go back, except for some that you might own. Or
yeah, the members, yeah. They can approach us and talk to, for example, the vendors, saying, we have a system of equipment we want to try out, if it works with Huawei, if it works with Foxtel, some vendors which are not that popular, for example, in Germany, because they are rarely seen there. So what they can do is just ask for them, we can install it, they can do some testing, some whatever. We can do testing for ourselves. We have a company doing Cisco trainings, for example, who wants to install their Cisco equipment there, and then in the next room the people can do telnet to the switches, but also can walk around and then go to the switches and work there, which is a kind of unique setup in a kind of non-commercial site in Frankfurt. So usually you go to a vendor and go to their lab, and then there are a lot of people around from this vendor saying this is a good hardware, you have to try it out, and etc. So what we do is to be a kind of neutral place where you can try this out, and you have also some people around who are working with different vendors, so you can have a little bit more objective view on what you're doing.
Have you got any other test and verification equipment like SmartBits or Ixias or Ranritsus or anything like that? At the moment
it's a kind of work in process. So we installed it 4th of April, I think, so 5th of April.
Really new then, okay, yeah.
So the lab is running for 3 weeks now, so we have a lot of demands from members, so it's we do it and we build it as the members would like to have it, so we cannot say what it will be in half or 1 year's time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any more questions for Bernard? If there isn't, I'll get Danielle up to present for Manix. After Danielle, I will give the Lynx presentation, and then Frank Simon will give the Sphinx presentation, and then Simone from Milan will give the Milan presentation.
Right, so I'm Daniele Arena from Namex, which is an internet exchange in Rome, Italy, if you don't know it. This is our update for this year. The last update was in Stockholm last year. So the usual stats. We're almost at 3 gigs, which is not exactly double last year, but nearly. We got a few more members, actually 2 less and 5 more, so it's mixed plus 3. A few more carriers on site. So what's happening? We opened to content providers. Strangely enough, Italy was... Italian ISPs were mostly not open to content providers. Access providers were the only ones on ISPs, but this changed last year, at least for us. We've been asked for a few new services, VLAN and Private Interconnect. Everybody has it, and we didn't, because no one asked for it, and now they did. We got a connection with the Italian Public Administration Network. I won't explain how the Public Administration Network works, but it's quite complex, and that's the same thing. We've been asked to provide a connection between ISPs and the PA network. and our human peering project. Actually, initially, network operators and peering coordinators don't get to meet, well, didn't get to meet much until we did a member meeting in 2004. And it was a great success, and they asked us to have more and more meetings, and we try not to turn into a convention organizing entity, but they like to meet, and they usually don't come to RAG meetings, so we host members and not only members meeting. We are looking for sponsors for next meeting, so if your target is network operators and you want to come to Italy, well, we are the right people to talk to, I think. We sort of opened a very, very small local ISP in Bari, which is, well, you see on the map, it's in southern Italy, just across from the Balkans. And it's in collaboration with the university in Casper, which is computing center. Well, that was mainly to keep local traffic local, because there's no ISPs south of Rome. And, well, traffic from southern Italy goes all the way up to Rome or to Milan and comes back. So we're trying to change that, if possible. And, well, this is a bit of an experiment, almost no cost. So we're trying that. We did some BGP analysis tools, but, well, everybody has that. So I'm not going to be long on this. And we saw an IPv6 revamp recently. In 4 months, our IPv6 peers have doubled. So maybe something's happening this way, but let's not rush too much. About the projects, we also have some VoIP peering enum for a particular meaning of that. We're working in collaboration with the Italian ISP industry, which is like ISP associations. Well, mostly what ISPs want is to exchange VoIP traffic over IP and not over SS7. So we did a very easy thing. We set up a private enum tree with a private numbering, and we did some functionality tests. We are doing some quality of service tests. This should lead to some kind of carrier enum probably in the next months. And we started doing some secondary TLD DNS hosting. We actually started with a very special member, which is the Pope. Actually, the official name is the Internet Office of the Holy See. And, well, we are hosting two secondary servers for .va, and they actually peer at our exchange. So they are the first foreign peers. I mean, we do have some multinational ISPs, but they are only based in the Vatican, so they're the first completely foreign peers. And we are the only internet exchange where they peer. So if you want to peer with the Pope, you know where to go. And I won't answer questions for the Pope. But thank you.
And what's their policy on root filtering, for example?
They have a very, very open peering policy, because they're mostly actually a content provider, because they host www.vatican.va, but they do have some access, because they are the only, the monopolist IXP in the Vatican City. So every priest in Vatican City has to go through them. But root filtering, well, I'm not sure. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Daniel. Okay. Here's my slides. I've not got a PowerPoint template for them, so I'm afraid they're just plain and vanilla, but hopefully that makes them fairly clear to read. Exchange overview, well, where are we today? We've still got strong member growth, so actually outgrowing our budget, because we're sat there and we're looking at all the ISPs in the UK and we're thinking, well, most of the main ones are members, and who's left to join? But we're 215 members today. That was the count this morning, anyway, from the website. And it's, you know, the growth still is from all over the place, so international and UK. Etty Salat recently joined and connected to the links, so it's our first member from the Middle East, and they're on now. I believe that, what's their name, my brain's fading. It was all that Raki last night, I've blown my brain cells away. So yeah, the other people that were talking about joining as well, Newstar were looking at joining again, bringing their VoIP and Enum server, the same as they're deploying over at Telling House. One thing we did was we opened a leaf node, in the sense it's like a pop on a stick rather than part of the main ring, near to an existing site. So this was like a small colo, relatively small number of square feet, not that many prospects for member growth and new members, so it doesn't really scale to go and put a great big 10 gig switch in there. So what we've done is we've used an inexpensive CWDM mux to go and take all the gig-y connections and bring them back into a big switch, and used a couple of smaller recycled switches to do all the 100 megag. And that just made it very cost effective and easy to go into that site, made it a much easier decision, and in fact it proved that what we did was effectively cost neutral, in the sense that it didn't cannibalize too many of the ports elsewhere in the network, because there's no point really opening a POP and you pop it, all it's going to do is cannibalize all your existing connections somewhere else, and it ends up just costing you more money for the same amount of income, same amount of revenue. There's also an intent to drop the traffic-based elements of the port fees this summer, and that will be discussed at the upcoming member meeting. Traffic-based charging really has done its job, and it's such a small element of the charge now, on average, say less than 15% of people's total bills, that it's not really worth levying this anymore, so it's going to go back to basic membership and per port fees. Hopefully, if the members vote for it. I would say something about turkeys voting for Christmas, but I won't. So technology-wise, we're just completing the upgrade of our Extreme network. So we're replacing the 6808, the old MSM3-based architecture that was 8 gig a slot, with Black Diamond 8810s. We decided to stay with Extreme. We had quite an exhaustive evaluation process, and it was somewhat better the devil you know, and that was our decision to stay with Extreme. And that's almost complete now. We're just rolling the last couple of switches out. And then we're already embarking now on a refresh and upgrade of the Foundry network because of the massive port growth. And we've got two new RX16s that are being deployed. As some of you will know, we had a go at deploying it on, was it Monday night, and it went horribly wrong. We're going to give it another go next week because we think we know what happened. And it looked like it wasn't the RX16 that was to blame, actually, in that case anyway. It was actually one of the older switches that we're actually trying to take out, ironically. So it knew that it was going to be ripped out and have a hissy fit and broke things. Have you noticed this about equipment? You know, if you go and put a new server in a rack, in the same rack as one it's replacing, and you stick the dynamo label on it, the server that is actually in service that you're about to migrate off just falls over straight away. You know, it's like, okay, fine, if you're going to be like that, I'm going to go away and cause you a headache. But basically, we're deploying the RX16s to cope with increased 10 gig demands, and I'll speak a little bit more about that later. One of the key things that will enable us to do is to increase the size and remodel the core ring as it stands into core rings, so we actually have increased into switch bandwidth. Just as a quick diagram to sort of show you what I'm planning on doing. So I effectively have rings of different sizes, and basically build a core ring and then a ring around the outside. It's possible to add more rings off of the core ring as well, so it means that we can expand in the future. And again, that's enabled by, in the case of Foundry, by deploying MRP Phase 2 or EAPS V2 in the case of Extreme. And they'll both look fairly similar again.
10 gig demand, it seems as a sweet spot where 10 gig really takes off, and Ramzix have already mentioned this, and enough peers take 10 gig ports that it starts to release TCP back pressure, and you actually see traffic increasing. There's a saying in the UK that shit expands to fill all available space, and that appears to be the same for internet traffic as well. And so what we're finding is as one or two people take 10 gig ports, and then a few more, all of a sudden the orders start to rocket. So I counted this morning, we have 19 10 gig ports provided to members. If we count our backbone links within the architecture, there's over 100 10 gig ports in total. We're estimating that we'll have over 50 10 gig ports online, 50 member 10 gig ports online on the network before the year ends. And that's quite a significant amount of growth. What we're seeing right now as well is a release of frustrated demand in that people took a 10 gig port on the Foundry, but until we upgraded the Extreme network, they couldn't get a 10 gig port on the Extreme. And now they are taking that 10 gig port on Extreme as well. There's been some changes in the London colo situation. Telecity and Redbus have merged, become the Borg, and they are Telecity Redbus. There's been price rises at both locations now, and increased power rationing, so that their standard offering with a rack is 5 amps now, and you have to pay more for if you want extra. There really seems to be concerns and issues about power in the Docklands area, about how much power can be delivered. Whenever people need new feeds, they're having to be bought in from out of town, things like that. So one thing we are doing is monitoring that for the members, to make sure that there is colo to keep up with the member demands, and also to monitor which other areas are going to become popular if Docklands really is truly saturated. Which other areas are going to become popular, and one of them seems to be some of the sites in the city again, but we're just going to have to see what happens with that. Other items, Bostar Lab may not be as sexy as Bernard's, it's a lot smaller. We've actually bought some new test equipment. We've got a pair of Ixia 400Ts, they're kind of quite small portable chassis with 10 gigabit cards and some more gig cards. It means that we can actually take this stuff out from the lab and take it out to site if we need to, so we can actually go and test live equipment if necessary. It's actually quite expensive stuff, but it's proved its worth already. It really is invaluable when we're testing and qualifying new equipment and new software. The other thing is we've got our member meeting coming up. That's on the 15th and 16th of May in London. Obviously, all members are invited. Any questions? No questions? Okay. I think Simone from Mix is next, after me. Simone? Oh, sorry, Sphinx and then Simone. Yeah, that's right. Okay. I can't remember my own agenda anymore. Sorry? No, you're last.
Okay, so my name is Frank Simon, I'm a Relator Technical Manager, and as Relator is running the Sphinx and also the Sphinx Technical Manager, so just a 3 to 4 minutes update about the Sphinx. The current status of the Sphinx is SwingPops, but as we had announced it 1 year ago, we have decided to close the Sphinx POP in Labo. This was the original POP opened about 6 years ago. The problem was not that it was not running or not working, it was that it was the only POP in which it was a POP managed by an operator, it was France Telecom building. Meanwhile, the other one were, I would say, carrier hotels in interaction and telehouse premises. And France Telecom has decided 1 year ago to sell the building and to migrate from premises dedicated to hosting to business offices, which were more useful in Paris. So we have to close the Sphinx on this POP. And so during the last few months, we had to manage migration from the ISPs from the Labo's POP to the two other ones, so interaction and telehouse. So for now, in January 2006, we just closed this POP. But in fact, we did not remove the dark fibers we were using between the POPs themselves, because we are still using it for the backup. And the next step is in fact to acquire a new dark fiber to be sure that we have two different paths to interconnect the two POPs and make sure that we have some redundancy in case of failure on one link. And so this step is planned for September 2006 to add a new dark fiber and completely remove then the former switches in the boost POP. And the second step, I would say, between the end of this year and beginning of next year is to add WDM on the dark fibers themselves. Because today 10 gig is enough for the interconnection, the second dark fiber is just for redundancy. But I think that within 1 year, 10 gig won't be enough. So in that case, rather than buying a new dark fiber, we'll just add a small WDM equipment on both ends and put two lambdas for the interconnection of the POPs. Just for the stats, I have no written stats, but we have a bit less than 60 ISPs connected to the streams, and the ports allocated, we have allocated about 70 ports because some of them are using several ports. And we have about 12 gig of traffic, average traffic between 10 and 15 gig of traffic. So for the services, as all the other gigs, we run IPv4, IPv6 unicast, also IPv4 multicast. And I plan within the next few months to propose, if there is a request for it, IPv6 multicast peering. Because Renata is running the Sphinx, and in Renata, we are running IPv6 multicast as a basic service. So we are also connected to the Sphinx itself, and if there are requests to peer with us with IPv6 multicast, then I will be happy to provide this service onto the Sphinx. A few months ago, we also launched a 10 gig offer. In fact, there is a real request for it since, I would say, 5 or 6 months. So the biggest players, which were using several gig, want now to migrate to 10 gig. So we have a 10 gig offer using a long reach Xenpack module. And if there is a request for it, I will also add extending reach Xenpack module in the offer. But today, the 10 gig long reach offer seems to be fine for the players. And about, four ISPs are subscribed to the 10 gig offer. And I would say that it represents only 10% of the players that have enough traffic to use such port. We have also an Anycast copy of the F and M root servers and secondary DNS servers for the .fr. And we provide, of course, statistics and TP service and so on. And we plan a Sphinx annual meeting in June. So the day is not yet decided, but it will be confirmed as soon as possible. So if you have any questions, just drop me a mail to simon@renater.fr and I will be happy to answer it. Thanks.
Any questions for Simon? Sorry, Frank Simon, sorry, beg your pardon. Right, next, Simone from Milan, and then Christian from Vienna. We're running about 5 minutes late on the agenda right now, so we do need to make up some time or we'll be sitting through our lunch break. Low battery again, okay. Paging Mr. Tech Person, low battery.
Says it's running off mains. No, ignore that. It's running off mains. It's fine.
It's okay.
Okay, hello everybody. I'm Simone Morandini from MIX. Our last update was in Manchester, and since then we have the same number of members, but as you can see. We lost 6 of them, 2 of them have been incorporated. We had 8 new members, 2 have been renamed, and we connected our first 10 gigs customer. In our data center, there are 13 carriers that have their own transmissive equipment, and we have 16 local operators that can provide fiber inside the campus. For what regards the statistics, as you can see better from the picture, we included private peering statistics in our public statistics since last April, and from last September we had an increase of 4 gigs and mostly public peering. We reached our peak of 17.5 gigs 2 weeks ago, more or less, in correspondence with the Italian election. Our members can have access to more detailed statistics, including real-time statistics and a historical view of the daily traffic and the traffic matrix statistics. For those who doesn't know, traffic matrix is a tool based on S-Flow that shows the amount of traffic that every interface connected to MIX exchanges with every other interface connected to MIX. What's new? From the administrative point of view, we are going to introduce a new charging scheme, and we have relaxed a bit our admission policies. And from the technical point of view, we upgraded our electrical power system, and we bought our own MIX OE from IEEE in order to assign MIX MAC addresses. And with the new charging scheme, we are going to introduce lower prices for base service, and we are going to introduce also a bonus for those ISPs that increase their public peering over a period of 6 months. It's not yet in force, but it will be within June. We relaxed our policies in the sense that now even hoster can connect to MIX, and the first hoster that is connected is CWEB, one of the largest Italian hosters. From the technical point of view, we bought 2 new UPS boxes that supply us power of 120 kilowatt-ampere, and these provide us complete redundancy because the total consumption of our data center is less than 60, and we have also 30 minutes of battery supply before the generator starts. Okay, the generator starts in 40 seconds, so we do not need half an hour to start the generator, but we are a bit more safe. Okay, we bought our own MAC addresses because we would like to have a better control over the traffic on the public VLAN, and in order to have a better control of remote peering devices and MPLS layer 2 customers, we want to adopt a port security mechanism for each interface connected to us, and this with a fixed MAC address, even when maintenance operation occurs, we do not need to change the configuration of our switches. And okay, we are the first. Let's see. We decided for this format with AS number information, a switch ID, port ID information, and a location ID that distinguish if a machine is connected inside our data center, outside our data center, or is a MPLS layer 2 customer. We are currently deploying it. We have already moved 4 interfaces, and we plan to migrate them in small groups of 5 members each. And luckily so far we have no complaints, and let's hope it will go this way. And that's it.
Are there any questions? Because I've just seen one on Java. I'll ask it. The question is from Arian at AMSIX, and he asks, why use dedicated Macs? What's the reason for doing that?
Yeah, the main reason is this one here. You can see there. We would like to have a better control of what happens on our peering VLAN. This is the main reason.
Okay. One of the things that Ian points out is that he's found out that it's very useful in correlating vendor-related issues by using the vendor OUI. We can go, oh, look at that, they're all Ciscos, or they're all Junipers, or they're all random PCs, or something like that. You know, I certainly have seen that in my experience at Lynx as well. I mean, one thing that sprung to my mind with the numbering scheme you're using, the addressing scheme, is it lends itself to completely static configuration of the MAC tables on the switches. You actually could turn off learning and completely replace dynamic learned FDBs with a completely static FDB, which may protect you from some things, but I mean, the other thing is you've got the port. What if a card fails and you've got to do a port move? You have to get the member to renumber their interface? So if you have a card fail, so you've got a switch ID and a port ID.
Yeah, switch ID is intended there. The switch to which the port is connected, and the port ID is an incremental number.
Oh, it's just an instance number, not the actual port number. Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay. Any other questions? No, and I've not seen anything come back from Jabba yet. So, okay, thank you very much, Simone. And next is Christian. And then after Christian, Remco, and then after Remco, Curtis. Curtis is on last because he speaks fast and might make up all the lost time.
What's the sorting criteria?
They were alphabetical, but anything that was uploaded since the last F5 is at the bottom.
Okay, my name is Christian Panegel, Vienna University. I'm presenting the Vienna Internet Exchange today. I did my last update at the Rust last write meeting. The current status is not much changed regarding members and traffic. I left in the point that we changed the peering LAN prefix length from /25 to /24. If there are members in the room, please check your routers. We have seen that some of you might not have done so, and we are now really exceeding the /25 area, so we are going to assign addresses above. We are now at 88 members, 9 of them doing IPv6 peerings, and our summary peaks are about 10 gigabits. We had no incidents since Write 51, except one, which was a planned one. We are now running on new switches. We completed a call for proposals late last year. We got 5 different offers, 4 different products. The winner was Foundry Bigaren RX16, which was delivered by Siemens Austria. So we are now running on a pair of Foundry RX16s, which hopefully are a robust and scaling 10 gig platform to go with for the next 3 to 5 years. And we can offer you 10 gig ports now. The first 10 gig port is in use by ourselves, being ARCONET. So the research network in Austria is the first 10 gig customer on the Vienna Internet Exchange. We have configured it with redundant switch fabric and redundant management processors, and we have 2 × n+1 power redundancy. So on every on UPS and on plane power, we have n+1 redundancy. The migration went smoothly. We had no major issues. We did it on two different nights. So for 24 hours, even the Foundry was connected to our old Extreme Black Diamond switch, and we had no problems at all. This smooth migration was based on really excellent cooperation with Siemens Foundry and Interaction, and also in the preparation phase, Big thanks to MSIX who let us use their lab and helped us with their experience, because they started production on their RX16s quite some weeks before we did. So thanks again, MSIX. There are some more good news. We have now better port security in place. Still, as it is the case for, I think, all of the exchange point I know, strictly only one MAC address per port is allowed, but now we accept a maximum of 2 MAC addresses just for hardware transition. So in case you are changing hardware for a short period, the switch might remember the old MAC address and is seeing the new one. So this transition phase should be covered by this. But we are strictly shutting down ports when we see more than 2 MAC addresses. So if you are playing around, please be aware that if the port shuts down, probably you have violated the port security. We have had no incidents in this regard. We have tested it and it worked in all cases properly. So we hope that you won't never see any problems. We have reduced the port costs from 1st of April, and these reduced costs will be applied to new customers, but also to existing customers, without that you have to update your contracts. And on request, we have changed our summary statistics. Now we are running them from left to right, as all other exchange points. This is a quick view of the new charging. You can look it up in the repository. And still there are some considerations, but no decisions yet. The one is that we intend to make dual 10 gig connections, meaning one 10 gig connection at every location, very attractive under special terms and conditions. And we are still planning to easing the connection to the Vienna Internet Exchange, as most other exchange points are currently doing. We will allow content providers and content facilitators to connect directly to the exchange point very soon. We have to rework the connection agreements for that, and we are just considering pseudo-wire connections, layer 2 connections, MPLS and so on, also known under remote and distant peerings, but we have to find out which terms and conditions have to be defined to exclude the possibility of a much increased workload and call rate on our call center. Any questions?
If there are no questions for Christian, I would like Lenko to come up and Curtis to be ready. Thank you, Christian.
Morning, everyone. Just a quick presentation to make up for Mike's time so we can go to luncheon time. Quick presentation on Index. We've seen quite some growth over the last since the last RAP meeting. Last RAP meeting, I was just updating this presentation this morning. I said that we had 52 members. There's now actually 63, so that's going quite well. We're doing quite a bit of closed user groups, so more or less freelance among parties. That's been quite good as well. We've opened up a new location. It's in Arnhem in the Netherlands. As the regular attendees of this meeting know, Index is an internet exchange that operates on the border area between the Netherlands and Germany. Progress. So we're now on 5 sites, 3 of them in the Netherlands, 2 in Germany. And there's 3 more in the Netherlands on the way, 2 more in Germany. We have more than 10 new connections since the last RAP meeting. It's going very well. Closed user groups are a big success as well. Seen quite some uptake on that. Which gives us a bit of a challenge scaling the network, both in terms of distances that we have in it. Going to look at topology a bit more carefully for the future. So we are going to move to CWDM equipment to make sure that we don't have to follow our fiber topology with our switch topology anymore. growth in user groups, even though we've only got 35 right now, we can see quite a tremendous growth of that in the future, and that will prove to be interesting. So we're looking at several technologies to make to cope with that. We're looking at for the new switching platform. We're looking at a couple of tricks with Q&Q, Mac and Mac, and we are actually quite fond of the R-Bridge proposal by Radio Perlman as well, because it can you can do interesting things with your switch topology without actually breaking stuff. That's pretty much it. Questions?
Are there any questions for Remco? If there are no questions for Remco, then Curtis, NetNode.
That's basically because of the speed. Where is my slide? Thank you very much. There. So, I'm Curtis from NetNode, in case you haven't seen me before. So, short update, who we are. Exchange Point in Scandinavia, run by a foundation, operate exchanges in 5 cities in Sweden, Stockholm, Gothenburg, Malmö, Sundsvall, and Luleå. Which is here, for those of you who don't know where Sweden is, this is Sweden. Luleå is a place up north. So, NetNode, historical-wise, was created to secure internet communications in Sweden. The switches are located in secure communication bunkers owned and operated by the government. That's true for all sites except Luleå. And in Stockholm, we actually operate these other 2 bunkers. And these bunkers for Stockholm and for the other sites as well, though, are not disclosed. So for Stockholm, if you want to connect to them, the fibers are included in the price, so you see the prices. That includes 2 fiber pairs and connections to 2 ports. So in Stockholm, this is the must-have picture of a communication bunker. Some of the servers is co-located with Swedish time, distributed to NTP. We are, of course, the operators of the iRoot server. We have some of the SCTLD site servers. And we also co-locate a number of TLDs, VeriSign's common net servers, and a bunch of others. And we also have a local copy of the RIPE routing registry that you can access if you're a network customer. Some news since last. Well, we're seeing the same 10 gig demand as all the others are doing, as all everybody else has seen. These are the ordered connections. Non Luleå, funny enough, as you'll see. We're getting a new customer, Comhem, which might be of interest. Comhem is the old cable TV arm of TeliaSonera, which is being broken out, and they're taking a quite substantial amount of traffic with them. They are going for 10 gig at all the sites at once, which has pushed us up a bit. We're also expecting to see a huge increase in traffic across NetNode with this. They have said that they're going to run a completely open peering policy, which might be interesting. We have also, as of last week, decided to go for upgrade the platforms in Gothenburg and Malmö to Foundry RX8s. We are hoping to install them really soon now. We'll most likely also upgrade all the other locations to Foundry RX series. That includes Stockholm. Stockholm currently is with Foundry MX, Foundry MG8s, and we'll probably try to replace those as well if we can. Some of our activities, we're going around doing one-on-one customer visits, talking to all the customers. We have, as of last night, upgraded software for the Black Diamond switches to get around some problems we had, and to get PIM version 2 snooping to support some of the multicast being used in Sweden. We're also having some problems on our Foundry MGAs in Stockholm, which, thanks to Mike and Lynx, we discovered was a well-known bug, and we had a software update during last night, and that seems to have resolved the issues. And instead of a Foundry tech, there were packet losses here across the switches. Customer is 35 in Stockholm, Gothenburg, Malmö, Sundsvall, and Luleå. Luleå is still the smallest exchange by far. Peak traffic load is around between 50-ish gig, what we're seeing around currently. it varies a bit during the days. We have seen a slight drop in the last few days, but that's because people move some traffic away due to the packet loss in Stockholm. Before I take questions, one thing that I didn't put in the slides is we have said in the past that we're using this year to review the cost that we're charging our customers. It turns out that one quarter of NetNode's costs, total costs, is for the fibers in Stockholm that we provide. And we think that we're paying way too much for fibers, considering that there's a fiber monopoly in Stockholm run by the government that's supposed to be equal, fair, and do this for the good of the internet. If you compare this to other cities, we actually think that we're paying way too much money to them. We are renegotiating the fiber contract with them. But another thing we're also considering doing, and we haven't told them, so I hope no one from Stockholm is here now, but we are considering actually putting CWDM equipment at the colo sites and therefore cancelling a huge bunch of fibers and trying to get the price down to members that way. We have no idea how we're going to charge this for the customers that are not at the co-location facilities, which is roughly half. We have to work on that. We don't really have a good idea of what we're doing with that. The other thing that's going on is everybody else brought up voice peering and content. We are starting a test bed in Stockholm. We're going to create a separate VLAN that everybody's happy to join. We are going to ask some of the content providers in Sweden to join the same VLAN, and we are trying to do primarily. The original intent was to try to experiment with getting multicast between the providers, so that the current providers that have sort of walled garden approaches to multicast, where they distribute TV channels inside their own networks, we want to be able to try and get those streams out to other providers and users, and use this as a case for trying to experience what we need to do in terms of debugging. Do we need AMT to get to DSL end users and pass their equipment and so on? That is hopefully starting within a week or two, and by the next right meeting, hopefully we have a lot more experiences we can share from this. Any questions? Was that fast enough, Mike?
That was very fast. Thank you, Curtis. Cheers. So next is Mehmet. He's going to have about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes on the peering Puerto Rico. Sounds like another excuse for a cruise to me, doesn't it? And then Hank is going to talk about his wonderful scaling problems at AMZIX, and then Grant's going to give a very quick update on what things look like in Asia-Pac, and hopefully we can still go for lunch.
Okay. So basically this is the appendix. First of all, I would like to say welcome to Istanbul one more time to everybody, and I hope you're enjoying it. So let's talk about the internet exchange in Puerto Rico. Unfortunately, you guys have been talking about gigabit, 10 gigabit. I'm really happy that you guys are achieving that much technology, but we are still on the hundreds and maybe small gigabits when it comes to the network exchange. So we have analyzed network statistics from several of Puerto Rico's largest networks. One of those networks, which is University of Puerto Rico, is also hosting the SETI at Home, one of the famous projects you might already know. And then also a large ISP, which is serving the Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic at the same time, and some smaller ISPs. Basically, the results of the research that we find was very interesting, because when you see other parts of the world, around 20 to 25% of traffic, which is local, considered as too much. But what we saw in Puerto Rico was this was around 50%. And it was really amazing, because there are around 30 ISPs or 30 networks with AS numbers in Puerto Rico, and there is no single peering between them in Puerto Rico. They are peering usually Miami or some other locations, which is in the mainland of US. Very high demand of the local communication, because Puerto Rico is a developing country at the moment, I mean developing part of United States, as we can say that. So there are many kids who want to connect to the internet and then contact with their classmates, or they just want to take online courses. Just a quick notice, all the universities in Puerto Rico offers online courses, so you don't really need to go to the class if you can't. You can take the classes and you can watch them online, all online. So this really helped. This really caused a big traffic. So why ISPR? The amount of bandwidth and fiber that's being wasted due to high demand of local communication and not having peer between the providers. High latency, and, well, let's see some examples. I will just pass real quick. This is the largest behind the government side. Those are basically 1 mile away from each other. The cores are 1 mile each away from each other, and you can see the traffic. And this is another one. And this is another one from Germany. And this is another one. So actually, this is two links. So, okay. So the real problems that some ISPs basically do not understand the economics of the running ISP. All they want is they just want to run the internet operations with minimum cost and simply no redundancy. Of course, I mean, we all want to run the internet services with minimum cost, but it's really not efficient way. And another problem that we are having in Puerto Rico is that we do not have that much senior network engineers who are actually working in Puerto Rico. Mostly people are working remotely for big and large ISPs, and therefore it's really hard to implement new technologies in Puerto Rico, such as Spirit. And, well, let's go ahead. Like, I can give an example from the network that we are connected. We have two OC3s to internet, and both of them are from the same company, and basically they are both all on the same fiber, and one OC3 is on one fiber and the other OC3 is just internet to connectivity with the same company basically. So, and unfortunately monopoly is still prevalent in both local loop and international bandwidth throughout the Caribbean. This is one of the real problems for Caribbean-wide case, but it's not really case of Puerto Rico, because unlike the other countries, there are many carriers that are actually have their connectivity to Puerto Rico and they are serving to Puerto Rico. The only problem is with the local loop. So, how was IXPR was founded? And Dr. Oscar Moreno, he's a very known Puerto Rican internet pioneer. He's the person who brings the internet to Puerto Rico, and as well as internet too. And they are actually, he is my boss, so I should tell very good things about him. I had the idea of the internet exchange, and then I presented many people, many ISPs in Puerto Rico, but he was basically the only one who really cared about developing the internet exchange with actually spending some money on it. So I am also technical contact for the internet exchange in Puerto Rico. I'm the only staff so far. Okay, well, this is how it is, our organization chart. And we have the Gauss Research Laboratory, which is basically decision maker position at the moment. And Board of Trustees, people like Bill Woodcock. Who knows Bill Woodcock? Probably everybody, yeah, more or less. So he's one of our Board of Trustee members. And then we have Board of Peers, the people who are actually members. And then Board of Collocation Facilities. Well, how is IXPR supported? Basically, we are non-profit organization, and core location, power and air condition, basically everything is power provided by University of Puerto Rico UPEDRS campus at no cost, and core equipment was provided by the PCH Packet Clearing House, and then the email services and web services are hosted by .pr registry, and labor, which is my salary, is paid by the PR registry, which is Gauss Research Laboratory. So, well, we have this infrastructure that we have core and we have co-location facilities, and basically we do not allow many ISPs to connect our core, and we are basically forwarding them to participate in IX through the co-location centers. With that way, we are also helping those who wants to run co-location centers to gain some money. However, at the moment, including co-location centers and us, we do not charge any ISP who wants to peer. So, you can see here, we will have some internet root servers. We already have some CCTL mirrors connected to internet exchange and so forth. So, as I said, there's no membership fees. The membership fees will be decided by the members when we have an enough amount, such like 20 members, they will decide, because at the moment we don't have that much cost. So, well, participants, it's really amazing that there are 30 networks, as I just said, and nobody is peering at the moment, but everybody wants to peer. So we went to all ISPs one by one and talked with them, and well, they said, okay, let's join. We want to join, and well, so we have all the ISPs interested, all the internet companies, internet-related companies such as voice over IP companies, hosting companies are interested. All the universities are interested, and as a de facto, we are also creating through internet exchange an island-wide national network for the academic research and universities, basically. And those universities, actually Puerto Rico, University of Puerto Rico is the last node for the internet tool, which is the educational network in United States, is the last node in Caribbean at the moment. And other than University of Puerto Rico, there are not any other university who is actually getting internet tool, but through the internet exchange, all the other universities in Puerto Rico will have the opportunity to use the internet tool, which is actually at the moment used a lot by the RSC Observatory, and simply I guess it will help the universities to do more researches in the area. So who we have on the board: University of Puerto Rico, biggest non-ISP network in Caribbean and Puerto Rico; Ultracom, well, they are the basically carriers of the carrier, they own the fibers in Caribbean, a lot of fibers. Centennial is a large ISP, Caribbean is a mid-large ISP as well. And Prepa is actually a power company, is a power company owned, basically government owned company. They have fibers all around the Puerto Rico, and they are willing to give us interconnectivity within Puerto Rico. And those are the other networks that are interested in joining, and those are basically getting their local loops and other necessary equipment to be part of internet exchange in Puerto Rico. As you can see here, Telefónica España and Sprint, one of the large ones. Banco Popular is the biggest Puerto Rican and Caribbean, and one of the largest bank in Latin American countries, as well as the United States, and Adelphia, and basically, I think that's all that are really famous. So those are the planned services that we are going to offer: Route Server, Looking Glass, and NTP, Webcache Parent, and News Server, Root Server Mirrors, and Software Mirrors such as SourceForge and Linux Distribution Mirrors. Well, other than Internet Exchange, I also would like to give you guys a little bit about the Puerto Rican Internet. So, Puerto Rican Internet, there are five companies that are actually licensed, that there are five licenses available to dig fibers and to operate fibers within Puerto Rico. And then those three licenses are already sold and operational. Those are PRTC Telephone Company, Centennial, and Prepa. So those are operating the fiber optic networks at the moment. High-speed internet is commonly used in Puerto Rico. There are not really much dial-up users anymore because it's really cheap to get 3 megabit down and 1 megabit up, let's say, with Adelphia for $30 a month. And I guess this price is pretty good comparing to our region. So we have 120,000 DSL customers at the moment, and they have average of 512 down and 128 up speed. This is 2005 estimated directly from the company who offers the DSL. And 80,000 cable internet customers we have. And other statistics from Puerto Rico: all the schools from kindergarten to university have high-speed connectivity to internet, and also an internet within each, between themselves. With the internet exchange, we completed the university side, but actually government just made the high schools and the other type of schools in Puerto Rico. And other statistics, which was done by University of Puerto Rico, to ask around 10,000 people, 10,000 students all around the island. Well, more than 80% of the students age 13 and up. This 13 and up actually rule a law in United States that people less than 13 years old are prohibited to do much things in the internet, you know. So we are asking only the people that are older than 13 years old, and they actually check their email once in a week. And this is a very good statistics, I believe, 80%. And we have 1 million internet users in Puerto Rico, over 4 million population. Those are the top 10 networks which are serving Puerto Rico. You can see the AS numbers, and NTT, Centennial, well, UUNET, and Level 3, University of Puerto Rico, Sprint, and goes down. So we have those networks available. I have the complete list available. If you guys are interested, or if you want to know these statistics for your company, try to find Todd from Renesis. So Puerto Rico and Caribbean statistics show that Puerto Rico and Jamaica are the largest internet users. However, Jamaica just had a tremendous growth in last year's. As you can, I don't know if you can read good the statistics, but there are really big growth from Jamaica, and Puerto Rico and Jamaica basically competing about the amount of internet users in their country. And Internet Exchange of Puerto Rico is the first internet exchange in Caribbean. However, there are very serious works in Jamaica to have the second one established, and I'm in touch with them, and I will give you an update in case if there is anything new and if they start being operational. So, well, the Caribbean-wide issues about internet exchanges is made basically because many years ago, companies went to those small islands and they made really long-term contracts, which cannot be canceled, or governments has to pay a lot of fines. So, they don't really offer a service the country needs, because we are talking about countries that are 40,000 people, that are 30,000 people. Therefore, all they need is really, really small. I mean, all the services that we have, they need it. But the amount of people, since it is too small, there is also not a big market growth. And also, this is very unfortunate. There are also some governments that are also protecting companies who are doing basically monopoly in those countries, and government laws are protecting them, so basically there is nothing much to do. So well, I would like to say quick thanks to some people, from of course, to Rai, to allow us to speak up and let you guys know about the internet in Caribbean and internet in Puerto Rico especially, and PR Registry for everything they have been doing until now, and Bill from PCH, Todd from Renesis, and Mike from Links for everything. If you have questions? No? Okay, enjoy Istanbul and have a nice day.
Okay, next up is Henk. He's going to talk about nightmare scaling things at Amsterdam. We are going to run into lunch, I'm afraid. If your tummy is rumbling and you really feel that you must go and eat, you can leave if you wish. I estimate we'll run into lunch by about 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay, I'm Henk Steenman from Amsterdam Internet Exchange. What I'll show you is how we scaled up the platform over the last 1.5 year and the months to come. Platform scaling was mainly driven by traffic growth, but was partly driven by graphic growth, but mainly driven by 10 gig port density, which was much higher than we ever expected. I will show you. So for traffic, what you see here is two graphs. The one is from March 2005, the other one from March 2006. Similar profiles, but traffic in 2005 changed between 28 and 58 gigabit, and in March 2006 between 58 and 144 gigabit. Now that's not very unusual. If we go back and see the average traffic volume per day since 1998, it follows a predictable curve, a nice exponential curve, which is even shown better here, where the vertical axis is logarithmic. So we can actually predict how much traffic we expect, and we can scale the platform on that. That's nothing unusual. Typical platform or traffic growth is in the order of 7% per month. There's also there was a little change in 2000. Before that, traffic growth was higher, and since 2001, the average traffic growth is more or less constant at the 7% figure. So to sustain the growth, however, last year there came a point where people couldn't cope with gigabit Ethernet ports anymore, not even with aggregated gigabit Ethernet ports, and went to 10 gig. And that took up very fast, much faster than we expected. So we even already connecting members on aggregated 10 gig ports. So to show you how ports distributed on the exchange. When you look at this figure, see the black line here is the member growth over time. The green line is the total ports over time. And then the lower graphs is a breakdown on the different types of ports. What you see is the this line is the 100 megabits, and this is the gigabit Ethernet ports. And they're actually, well, we think not much growing anymore. A growth that we still see is in 10 megabits ports, but that's mostly for special projects. And then for long reach gigabit Ethernet ports, there's still some growth. But the big growth is here in the yellow line on the 10 gigabit Ethernet ports, which is almost on the same angle as the total port growth. So this is what we're up against, 7% traffic growth per month. Oh, I already had that. So, let's see. Yeah. Okay, before I show you how we change the platform, this is a short overview of how our platform works. It's not very usual, I think. Basically, our platform is a hub-spoke topology. In the middle, we have a core switch that connects to some edge switches at the bottom on different locations. There are shown only two, but there are much more. The edge switches, we connect customer routers with access speeds up to gigabit Ethernet. And the switch on top is what we call a 10 gigabit Ethernet access switch. And here are the 10 gigabit Ethernet customer routers. And we connect them to the 10 gigabit Ethernet access switch through a so-called photonic switch, which is essentially an automated fiber panel that connects the fiber coming from the customer router to any of the other fibers connecting to that switch. So this is the basic of our platform. To make it resilient, we have a similar setup, built a similar setup. So we have two core switches, and we have two 10 gigabit Ethernet access switches. And the gigabit Ethernet access switches are connected to both core switches. Now the core switches talk something what's called VSRP, Virtual Switch Redundancy Protocol. It's a protocol that have the two core switches elect a master and a backup switch. Master switch opens up its ports and forwards traffic. The backup switch blocks its ports and doesn't allow traffic to go on. So essentially, there's only one half of the graph or network working, either the blue or the red part of the graph. Now to connect the 10 gigabit customer to the 10 gigabit access switch that's on the active part of the network, we use the photonic switches. The photonic switches are steered by a protocol called TL1. And we build some software to listen to the VSRP information coming from the core switches, convert that to TL1 commands to manage the
photonic switches and have the 10K customers on the right part of the network. Okay, so we started offering 10 gig ports end of 2004. There was initially very limited interest. Most members thought hardware on their routers far too expensive. And based on extensive discussions and research, we expected 15 to 20 ports end of 2005. And we built a national network on that. What happened is that we're already at 49 member ports. We have over 10 queued now, and we have 5 connections of that are on 2x10 gig aggregated links. Now, how did we do that? So that was our challenge, to build the infrastructure to support it. So initially, end of 2004, we could provide 21 10 gig customer ports. We did it like this. You see, the four sites that M6 is present, NICEF, SARA, TeleCity, Global Switch. These are the two core switches I mentioned. This is the gigabit Ethernet access switches. And we had two photonic switches, only at TeleCity and NICEF. There was no demand at Global Switch, so we didn't offer 10 gig there at that time. SARA 10 gig customers we connected by fiber on the NICEF photonic switch. And TeleCity had its own photonic switch. So in the core we used at that time the Foundry Networks MG8 that had 32 10 gig ports available. We used 11 to connect to the Geeky edge switches, and we could provide 21 10 gig. Well, these were sold out pretty fast, so we had to go to phase 2 where we added the first mentioned 10 gig access switches. We put up a photonic switch also at SARA, and we distributed the 10 gig customer connections over the 10 gig access switches and the core switches. And we had 80 gig or 8 ports served between the 10 gig access switch and the core switch. And then we could provide 37 10 gig ports. It was still not enough, so we had to go to phase 3, where we are more or less now. We upgraded the core switches to then available RX16s, which offered 64 10 gig ports. Luckily they were available, otherwise we would have had a big problem. And we added two more 10 gig access switches, and that allowed us to grow from 48 to 83 10 gig ports. And the larger number is if we distribute also 10 gig customer ports on the core switches itself and not only on the access switches. So this is our current state, and what we're just about are building and have partly finished is stage 4, and that for the time being that will end it. And it will allow us to go up to 127 10 gig ports to connect members. We still have RX16s in the core. We have at the moment two RX16s at NICEF, which the photonic switch switches between. We will have two MGHs initially at SARA and two MGHs at TeleCity. And we will have a photonic switch at Global switch connecting to the two TeleCity switches. Now, initially, this will be with the MGH, we can handle 97 10 gig ports. And when we upgrade these to RX16s, also we can handle 127. So that's where we are, what we are currently building. We think we will. We will cope with 10 gig demand with 127 ports available until the end of 2007, early 2008, unless it goes much faster again than we expect. So this is our big friend in the whole process. This is the photonic switch. It makes it available to almost unnoticed swap customer connections from one switch to another switch. Have another switch introduced to the platform, put a customer on there, put it back on another switch on the failover. This is really a very cute and nice tool.
So right after phase 4, we expect 127 ports, end of 2007, early 2008. What we really need is even larger switches with more 10 dB ports. We know there's being worked on, so that's not probably going to be a problem. And the other thing is that what we really need is the next generation of Ethernet, either 40 or preferably 100 gig. And there's really a slow start on the standardization process of that. So if you talk to your vendors and you see similar problems, give them a push or a kick or whatever. And that will help us also. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Hank. That was really interesting, actually, about the challenges that you're facing at the moment with the tools that we've got in the industry to provide all this. We've got one more presentation before lunch, and that's Gaurav. He's going to give a very quick update, if there's no questions for Hank, or you can grab him over lunch, I guess. Gaurav's going to give a quick update on the state of peering in the Asia-Pac region. Very, very, very quick 5-minute update. I have one piece of AOB, and then we'll go for lunch.
Okay, thank you, Mike. I'm actually not going to talk about peering, I'm going to talk about IXS. IXPs in Asia-Pacific. I got 5 slides, I have 3 minutes, so I'll run. Basically, the 3 big extent points in Asia-Pacific are in Japan, Hong Kong, and Singapore. That's where most of the traffic, international traffic, congregates. If you're going to go to Japan, I think the best place to go there is the automatic building, where it looks like everybody starts an exchange point in that building now and then. But there are at least, I know, 4 of them who are there. JP9 is called DIX-E now, which used to be NSPIXP2, the JPIX, as well as the Yahoo BBIX. All of them run into multiple gigs, I mean, huge amount of traffic. Internationally, the biggest exchange point in Asia is to Hong Kong. Basically, it's one exchange point, SKIX. They have a mandatory peering, mandatory route server, so you don't see all the routes there, but you run into any colo in Hong Kong and you'll get a metro Ethernet to SKIX. So that's Hong Kong. And it's cheap, best place in Asia to peer. Singapore, Equinix Singapore is getting a lot more ISPs from neighboring countries like Malaysia, Indonesia, and all this. But still, it is a Singtel monopoly in Singapore. So, and then I think they have capacity problems running into Singapore right now. But Singapore is iffy, but they are trying to develop it. So those are the 3 big. There are a couple of smaller players, regional players, as I call them. In Australia, there is WAX and Perth, which is the biggest exchange point in Australia with almost 100 members or something. Then Pike Networks operates a metro Ethernet backbone within Australia, and they sell metro Ethernet, and they also pretend to be an IX. I didn't quite understand that. Equinix Sydney trying to get there, but I think it's still again another Telstra won't peer with anyone in Australia thing, so not much. New Zealand, there is Auckland peering exchange, AP and Wix, and CityLink operates another 3 or 4 exchange points in New Zealand. They're pretty good there. In terms of exchange points. India, there's NIXI, which is somewhat iffy to call an exchange point, but I think they'll get there in a couple of years. Right now, VSNL won't peer there properly. They've got a completely broken peering policy and exchange point. They do this X minus Y input traffic, like reduce the output traffic and all sorts of funny things like that. So hopefully they'll fix that. Talk to me about that if you want to know more about that. Korea is KIBC, and I haven't heard about any internet exchange point updates from Korea. Whenever I talk to them, it looks like everybody claims they have an exchange point in Korea, but it's most often the big 4 players have multiple gigs, cross connects with each other, fiber across Seoul, not really a switch to which all the ISPs connect. Taiwan, there are multiple ISPs. Again, I'm not so sure about the picture in Taiwan because we don't hear from them so often. But yes, there is an exchange point there. Quite a lot of smaller ones. There is The big small exchange is the Illumination Exchange Point in Jakarta. There were three locations, pretty good, Metro 5 were running. The VNIX, the Vietnam Internet Exchange, 2 years old, in two places now, Ho Chi Minh City and Hanoi. And then, of course, the NPIX, VDIX, and another one in Sri Lanka. There is another functioning exchange for a while, has been the OpenMix in Mongolia. Now, transit monopolies. So, for all these other countries in Asia Pacific where there is no exchange points, it's mostly transit monopolies who run a NAP and call it an IX. And the most famous one of them is the Singtel IX, which is a NAP for Singtel for saving services. And that's why Singapore, a lot of people don't go there, because either you become a customer to Singtel or sell it to Singtel to be in Singapore, right? So, and then there is capacity problems about fiber going there. Not a lot of people have their own capacity, which is not owned by Singtel. So it's a bit scary, but I think a lot of people are still building into Singapore, so that's good. China, everybody knows the story. Thailand, they say it's opened up market, but I don't think so. It's still, the physical infrastructure is owned by the monopoly telco, so even though they have some kind of liberalization, it doesn't work. Malaysia, same thing, two providers talk to each other, but the traffic goes through Malaysia, Singapore all the time, so I don't know what's the case. Pakistan, same thing, transit monopolies. And other than this, I think there are a lot of smaller countries where there's just one ISP or two ISPs and they really don't have an exchange point. Thank you. And if you want to know more about IX peering in Asia Pacific, I think the right place is to go to Epicot, which is next year in Bali, Indonesia. Thank you.
Thank you, Gaurav. Any more questions for Gaurav? No. Okay, so with that, that brings us to a close with that invitation to go on a lovely holiday. Winter in the Northern Hemisphere in February in Bali, no contest, is there? So we have an item that was presentations in absentia, and obviously we've not got enough time to present those. They have been uploaded, and therefore they will be submitted into the record and recorded in the minutes that they've been submitted. There was a presentation from the Gigapix in Portugal and also a presentation from LONAP. And you can go and look at those in your own time on the website. I have one piece of AOB, and that's to the people that contribute regularly to this meeting. A lot of you are coming to me too late to ask to present and to plan the time properly. When we set the meeting plan as working group chairs, we need to get the meeting plan out 8 to 10 weeks in advance so you can plan your travel and get authorization to come. And we need to get the agenda sorted. Sorry that the agenda was really late this time, and that was just lack of communication between us, between the three working group chairs. It was a case of, I think somebody once said, there's no such thing as teamwork. Teamwork means you expect somebody else to do it. And one of the problems that we've got is I have to go and bid for time effectively with the NCC to get enough time. Right now, I've only got a 90-minute slot, and we've easily got enough material to fill 2 hours. Now, if I know in advance I'm going to have enough material to fill 2 hours, I can go to the NCC and say I would like one of the 2 hour slots, such as the ones this afternoon. But I need to know that much further in advance. So one thing I'll do next time is I'll put out the call for presentations much, much earlier. Secondly, if you think you've got anything interesting or substantive, particularly Hank's talk, for example, and certainly Mehmet's talk, which we did know was coming, those things really interesting, and if we know we've got a number of sort of chunky substantive things, that means I can much sooner say I need a 2 hour slot or I need 2 90-minute slots if there's that much material. There is some flexibility in that, but now that the plenary eats a little bit more of the week than it used to, so it eats an extra day, which is great because we can all sit in that one session and we can see all this good stuff, but at the same time it means that we've got to be much more clever with our scheduling. So to get the best out of the working group, you guys need to work with us. So otherwise, that's it. Thanks very much. Teşekkür ederim. And I'll see you all in Amsterdam.